Hello, and welcome to Forever in Bloom, a cinematic exploration, investigation, and celebration of Jeff Goldblum's cinematic career. I'm Seb, and this is a weird one. Today we're talking about the adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across the eighth dimension, and we actually have spoken about this film 2.5 times. We've recorded the episode multiple times, and it's gone wrong each time. We've lost entire recordings, we've lost partial recordings. But I've managed to piece something together, and I've asked the lovely Liam and Beth to re-record a couple of little extra bits for you. So let's get right into it. Here is Beth doing a Werner Herzog impression of the opening crawl of The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across the Eighth Dimension.
Banzai, born to an American mother and Japanese father, thus began life as he was destined to live it, going in several directions at once. A brilliant neurosurgeon, this restless young man grew quickly dissatisfied with a life devoted solely to medicine. He roamed the planet, studying martial arts and particle physics, collecting around him a most eccentric group of friends, those hard-rocking scientists, the Hong Kong Cavaliers. And now, with his astounding jet car ready for a bold assault on the dimension barrier, Buckaroo Banzai faces the greatest challenge of his turbulent life. While high above Earth, an alien spacecraft keeps a nervous watch on Team Banzai's every move.
So, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai is about an adventurer, brain surgeon, dimension hopper, crime fighter, flugelhorn player, guitarist, martial artist, and his group of seven, eight, nine men that who are called the Hong Kong Cavaliers. They have to fight against and with some aliens called the Lectoids that have come to try and free their beings from the eighth dimension, their comrades. They've taken over John Lithgow's body to try and do this, and a lot of wild acid trip of a movie stuff happens in between.
This is the film I'm the most prepared to talk about.
Oh God, I'm not prepared at all, even though I've watched it three times. I'm not prepared. Well, once for the first time we re-recorded, and then again when we watched it together, and then today. Although the last time I didn't really take it in.
It's fucking wild, man. It's episode 10. This is a 1984 film. Jeff plays someone just called New Jersey.
He says they all call me New Jersey.
New Jersey.
I think there's one mention of his name, and then he says they all call me New Jersey, and then from that point on, he's just New Jersey.
Then why put a name in the first place, you know? Just call him New Jersey.
New Jersey. So Jeff is dressed as a cowboy.
Cowboy Jeff.
Jeff's sheepskin chaps, mate. Oh my God.
Yeah, so Jeff randomly rocks up at one point dressed as a full-on cowboy.
They introduce him in the first scene as a surgeon, and he's talking in the surgery, and then he's just a cowboy surgeon.
That's true. Cowboy surgeon, crime fighter.
Again, which just feels like another one of those...
Which is actually the name of my next
band. It feels
band.
Like another one of those things they've just thrown in there, being like, oh, and there's a cowboy. They'll be like, oh, the film, you know, the amazing cult film where Jeff Goldblum's a cowboy. And it just doesn't add anything. It's not good.
I would argue that it adds pleasure for me.
Well, we're aware that Jeff had, he was able to contribute quite a lot to his roles throughout his career. Do you think this was one of those wild card decisions that he decided to bring in? The fact that he plays piano and he eats in most of his films, we know now that that's, you know, he's had an impact. So maybe he's tried the cowboy thing and tried it for one film. I can't think of any other films.
I would implore people to watch it just for the chaps.
It's got a lot going on.
That's the thing, because I remembered it as being this really, this like long epic masterpiece of a film. I thought it was like 4 hours long. And then when I watched it today, I realised it's only an hour and 40. Masterpiece was the wrong word. I regretted that as soon as it fell out of my orifice. It feels long.
Yeah, it feels long.
This is the thing, right? So any film that's an hour and 30 or under, you go, ah, oh, that's a short film. That's like under an hour and a half. But if it's an hour and 42, that's a long film to me.
Yeah, that's like a whole afternoon.
Absolutely not.
But it's like 14 minutes more. But it's because you round it up to 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah. An hour and three quarter film is 2 hours long.
Yeah. An hour and a half, which is like most Disney films, which is short. That's a short film. Or it's an hour and 42 and it's 2 hours and it's a long film.
I've written down all the things I've seen him do in the film, if you would like to hear the list of jobs that we've seen him do. So he's a guitarist, he's a singer, he's a jet car driver, he plays the trumpet, he's also a neurosurgeon, a pilot, a parachutist, a parachuter. He's also the head of a crime-fighting team called the Hong Kong Cavaliers, which have a series of comics after
them. He's also a sexy man. The Cavaliers, that's his band, isn't it?
They're more than a band, Beth.
Band slash crime fighters slash scientists, yeah.
They're doctors, they're hackers.
There's a funny word they use to describe him. It's polymath? Polymath? As someone who has so much knowledge.
So I guess to be a part of the Hong Kong Cavaliers, you have to have at least 5 trades that you can excel at. So he can dance and play piano, so they bring him into the band. He's a neurosurgeon, so he's allowed to help out with in a what's Bonsai Institute, and he's also a cowboy. So the guy that directed this was W.D. Richter, however you say it.
He wrote Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah. Wrote Invasion of the Body Snatchers and Big Trouble in Little China as well.
They show a lot of similarities.
Yeah, but this is one of 2 films he's only directed, and the other one I didn't even recognise. So clearly, this was the last film he ever directed,
was
unsurprisingly.
It? Wow. I feel like this film, it has a lot of comic strip stylization to it.
Yeah.
And it could potentially be a really interesting amalgamation of like all kinds of nerd culture coming together.
Yeah.
But the effect it had on me was that I wasn't really in on the story. I wasn't in on the joke.
Yeah.
I wasn't invested in the characters. Well, I wasn't in it.
Looks like shit, colour wise, I think. And interestingly, they were gonna get the cinematographer in for the guy, I can't remember his name, but the guy, the Blade Runner, the original one. And then he started the film, and then against like all of the cast and director's will, the studio fired him to bring in a guy to intentionally bring like a cheap comic-y sort of look to it. And then
it felt like there was too many ideas. The editing was its own complete entity. It did not complement the story or anything that was going on. It was completely its own thing.
This film is an acid trip.
I think we need to, for everyone's sake, not get too caught up in those tiny details, because we're just going to spend much time nitpicking it. And it doesn't even make any fucking sense anyway.
The two lead characters in this film do not really know what this film is about. So in some of my extracurricular research for this film, there is a great interview with Peter Weller, who plays Buckaroo Banzai, and John Lithgow, who plays the antagonist, John Warfin, 5 years ago. Because it's a cult classic, none of them had ever seen it in a cinema, and this film had a surprise showing at New York Science Fiction Film Festival, and they were guests to talk about it. And they also had a host who is a comic book guy, I think. And the first thing that was said by both Peter Weller and John Lithgow was, to the audience and to the host, can any of you tell me what this film is about?
You know how there's like the writing technique or like a creative technique in any format where it's just like, get every idea out of your head as possible,
yeah.
Get it onto the page and then start to reduce.
Yeah.
I feel like they just ran out of time. Yeah. They got everything on the page and were like, fuck, we need to make this film. And they just kept every idea they ever had, good or bad, in this film.
Yes, so as you can probably tell, the film is not very good at explaining itself.
No, it's terrible.
It's insane. Like everything just happens so quickly. Like Buckaroo's first like interaction with one of the aliens, he just kicks him in the dick.
Yeah.
And they also make a point in like their opening Star Wars text crawl that he is a martial artist. And like we've said, there's barely any like actual martial arts in this movie. He definitely doesn't do any.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like I feel like the downfall of this film is it was written to become a cult film. And I feel like they're trying to achieve what cult films achieve in the sense that every bit of, you know, those films like Wayne's World where there's so many quotable moments that the mundane bits of dialogue that were never meant to be quotes become quotes. I feel like they've tried to do that. And when you try and do that in a script, it fails. It has to just occur naturally.
Do you know how accurate you are about the fact that it was written to be a cult film?
Probably incredibly accurate.
It was marketed before it was released as the new cult film for sci-fi fans.
Like, who? Like, what?
There's actually a documentary about the making of this film.
Is that? We should have watched that.
Which is impossible to find on the internet, so I actually bought it on Blu-ray.
You're a legend, Seb. I think we should.
It's only about 20 minutes long, but it's fascinating.
I either agree or disagree with whatever was just said.
Liam, you usually are the one that comes in with some questions for us. I've just got one for you two. So, in the casting process, this was going to be the first lead role for someone to play Buckaroo Banzai, David Beagleman, the guy who was the executive producer that hated red glasses and whatnot, he said that this actor was never going to have a career. So palmed him off and got Peter Weller instead. Do you want to take a guess of who that might have been?
When was this film made again?
84.
I'm Liam and my guess is John Hurt.
What a different film that would be if this was John Hurt.
I have no idea. No idea.
The thing is, I'm going to tell you who it is and you're going to be sad that that's not what we got. Because this would have been the first lead role film for Tom Hanks. He was chosen to do it and the executive said, no, this guy can't act.
Time for the tagline game, which we don't have a theme or anything for. So I'll play a theme in now on my kalimba.
Thanks.
Taglines. Right.
Have you considered getting into ASMR?
I may.
Separate discussion. I've accidentally done ASMR this week, but we'll get into that another time.
Okay, well no, we won't, because I never ever want to hear that until after I die.
Okay, fair enough.
So I have three taglines for you. Two are made up by me. One of them's the original one. People should know it by now, but there we go. Number one, beings from another dimension have invaded your world. Number two, if we blow this today, there ain't no tomorrow.
Good.
And number three, adventurer, brain surgeon, and rock musician. Will he be a hero next?
So, I can't remember if we've done this before.
Did we do this
but
last time?
I don't remember any of those.
Did we
three.
Do this last time, Liam?
We did, but I can't, and I actually can't remember which one is the real one as well, so I'm going to look it up again.
I think the quality of your tagline writing skills has increased in calibre.
Oh, thanks, man.
For sure.
Yeah, they're all feasible.
That's the least useless skills I have in my life. All right, okay, I know which one it is now. Do you want to hear them again, or are you
yeah,
good?
No, yeah, bring it, give it to me another time. Give me it one.
Number
more.
One. Beings from another dimension have invaded your world. Number two, if we blow this today, there ain't no tomorrow. And number three, adventurer, brain surgeon, and rock musician. Will he be a hero next?
I think three.
I think three as well.
But part of me, there's a little voice in my head that says it's definitely two.
The first two to me are just a bit clunky, but the film itself is incredible. Oh my God, my dad just called me.
Get your phone call.
My dad just called me. Will that fuck up the recording?
No, not yet.
So yeah, what are your votes?
I think it's the third one.
You think it's adventurer, brain surgeon, and rock musician. Will he be a hero next?
Yeah.
I think Seb? So. Yeah, no, I'm going to agree.
You're both wrong as fuck.
Cool.
Which
I'm
one?
Good.
It's actually the worst one, which is beings from another dimension have invaded
That's
your
rubbish.
World.
There are actually four taglines again for this movie, because that apparently was a thing for movies back then. So you have, beings from another dimension have invaded your world. You can't see them, but they can see you. Your only hope is Buckaroo Banzai. Or, this is probably the best one, expect the unexpected.
I guess that, like, taglines...
Fuck yeah!
Taglines as a whole, they have a... they change over time in terms of what their use would be. It would be like on movie posters or on billboards or, you know, like how are they used now? Films don't really have taglines anymore, do they? They just have trailers.
Apparently they do, because I was just looking this up because I didn't know. But
they're barely used, but they are still there. Like, what was the... Seb, what was that fucking tagline for that horror movie about, like, the sleeper man or whatever the fuck?
Oh, it was? I can't remember.
It was so bad.
So I am the one that I just checked is, I watched Knives Out again last night because it's fantastic.
Woo, sick film.
And its tagline is, hell, any of them could have done it.
I like that. I like it when it's succinct and stripped back.
The moment we gave our scores for this film has been lost to the void, but safe to say, we were a bit generous with our ratings.
So, that was... What's the score? Where is it? Yeah, I think it's...
So, as we had our little kerfuffle there, the scores we've given it, place it at number 6 of 16.
Are you joking?
I'm actually okay with
Beth,
that.
Beth, you simmer down right now.
I've been simmering this whole time.
Because it is a straight draw with Annie Hall.
Ah. Oh.
Fuck yes.
We've given it, it's exactly 43 points each for those films. Okay.
I always forget that this score system has to reflect three parties' views and not just my own, so yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It has to, you know, and like number one is still Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which I think is still a deserved.
Great.
But remember, we are finding the best Jeff film, and if we're talking about the best film for Jeff, he's shit. He's not shit, but the role of Jeff is weak in Annie.
There's only.
I think it's pretty strong.
There's only one film. Chaps.
There are no chaps.
He's not a cowboy.
Oh, we've actually had two films where we've given Jeff zeros.
What? Can you just load off the top four for me?
Okay, so the top four, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, The Big Chill coming in at number 2, only 0.5 of a point behind
Bam.
Body Snatchers. And then we have Between the Lines, which I did enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have The Right Stuff.
Okay.
That seems too high.
Liam, you gave The Right Stuff not great scores, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
But me and Beth, I think, enjoyed it more than you did. So.
Fucking. You fucked it.
But, you know, so one thing we didn't even get into here, but that's fine, is the Bloomerverse.
Oh, go on.
Oh, shit.
So I'm just, do you know what? I'm not going to give it to you.
Why?
What?
Neither of you deserve hearing about it.
What about the listener?
Done.
So I'm I'm gonna give them something separate and special.
Oh mate.
So you two don't
what is
even
this mutiny.
Yeah, no, you two don't deserve
Seb, it. Seb, I bet you were a pro at sweet talking teachers into not handing in your homework when you're a kid.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Closer to the hole, sir.
No, so here's the thing.
Jeff is learning. He is traveling across America, becoming a leading scientist in every field he tries his hand at. Was this before or after he developed an artificial heart to save a child's life in Threshold? What is it he's preparing for? Only time will tell.
I mean, it's just as plausible as the Bible, so... Sorry. Carry on. Sorry.
Just balls to the wall nonsense and garbage, mate. That just...
Oh!
Our boy's gone.
Seb? He looks like an Italian chef.
Yeah, he's halfway through this. Somebody touch the rest of him.
All right, Seb, judge up, Pete.
Oh.
Oh, bye.
See you later, then, Seb.
we bring him back in?
This has been a sham.
It's been a train wreck, hasn't it? Twice. Oh God.
Fuck's sake.
Well, maybe we should just end there.
Yeah, Seb's gone. Fuck him. He's leaving us out for his part of the episode, so we'll leave him out for this. That was Buckaroo Banzai, the film 16. It's sixth, I think you said, at the table. So sorry this was a very fucked up hybrid Frankenstein of an episode, but we'll be recording a bonus behind the episodes about the documentary that Seb has found on this movie, and we'll be coming back with more content in the next week or two. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Oh, Seb's ringing me. Wash
your hands.
Bye.
We don't have to be mean, 'cause remember, no matter where you go, there you are.